Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos, my friends. My name is Jed Lee, and you are listening to Reading with Your Kids, broadcasting from the vibrant and book-loving neighborhood of Reeville in beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. This is more than just a podcast. It's a movement. Our mission is to help families grow closer, stronger, and kinder through the magic of reading together. And we are thrilled to have you along with us on that journey. Help us spread the word by sharing the podcast with the people you love. Tell your kids' teachers, school librarians, neighbors that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Amazon Music. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We've got an absolutely delightful episode ahead, so let's dive in. First up, Deanna Lopez is returning to Reading with Your Kids to celebrate Ava and the Owl Witch. Later in the show, Kathleen McGinnis-Kickline is here to celebrate her new picture book, Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree. And later in the show, we'll be listening back to a really fun interview we had with Chris and J.J. Graberstein talking about how to voice characters while you're reading or while you're recording an audiobook. It's a really fun listen, and JJ and Chris are going to be with us in the very near future. Before we invite our wonderful guests into the studio, we want to let you know that this episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Once Upon a Dance. Let me tell you a little story. My beautiful wife and I were just at the Chappaqua Children's Book Festival in beautiful Chappaqua, New York. What an amazing event. We had a table there. We're celebrating a number of our sponsors here in the fall. One of our sponsors, of course, is Once Upon a Dance. And I can't tell you the number of kids that came over and they saw the Once Upon a Dance book, Princess Naomi Helps a Unicorn. And the kids were so excited because it was their favorite book. They had it in their children's library. They were so excited. They were also excited to see the other Once Upon a Dance book on our table, Tales of Twirl. And they were so excited. They were planning to run out and order it on Amazon. These books are fantastic, especially if you think your kids are spending too much time on their screen. Once Upon a Dance offers unplugged storyline adventures. Read, move, and imagine together. Created by a dance educator, this award-winning collection blends movement with whimsy. Perfect for families, classrooms, and libraries. And I dare say dance studios. Bring stories to life. Visit onceuponadance.com or order Once Upon a Dance books at your favorite bookstore. This episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Careful What You Hear, a wonderful middle grade novel by Helen Dunlop Newton. Noah Baker is not an average 13-year-old. He's a mind-reading secret agent. Ever since a mix-up gave him an experimental cochlear implant, he and his partner Lena have been going on spying missions for the government. Now they're in for a reward for all of their hard work, space camp. Their fun threatens to melt away when Noah overhears thoughts revealing a plot to steal secret plans from nearby Redstone Arsenal. Should Noah report what he heard and risk losing a chance to compete in the end of camp mission with Lena? Or should he keep quiet and risk bad people winning again? Careful What You Hear is the sequel to Helen's very popular Do You Hear What I Hear? Get your copy today. You and your kids are going to love it. Careful What You Hear by Helen Dunlop Newton. Hey, families, would you like to share a miracle with your kids? At the Wolf Conservation Center, hope was fading. The endangered Mexican wolves dreamed of a pup, but none had come. Until one tiny miracle changed everything. Meet Trumpet, a real-life wolf pup whose incredible birth brought joy, hope, and a lesson in conservation. Trumpet the Miracle Wolf, written by Leocadia George, is a heartwarming true story that will inspire your whole family. Teach your kids the power of hope, love, and protection. protecting endangered species. Get your copy today and join the wild adventure. You know, I love meeting new authors, but I also love welcoming back authors who've been on the show in the past, and that is happening today. Our guest is here today to celebrate the third and final book in her Los Monstruos series. The name of the new book is Ava and the Owl Witch. Please welcome back to the show, Diana Lopez. Hey, Diana, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Love having you back. We've had some great conversations in the past about your books, and I know I'm going to love this one. Tell us about Ava and the Owl Witch, please.
So in Ava and the Owl Witch, we return to the town of Tres Leches, Texas. and so this is the third kind of major character in my series. We get to hear her story, and it's really about her relationship with her mother. Her mother is La Lechuza, which is an owl witch. So her mother is in the shape of an owl, but, you know, she flies and she kind of she kind of patrols the night skies. And when she sees potential troublemakers, she picks them up and removes them from the town. And so, you know, so she's not very well liked in town. But, you know, Ava, as the story moves on, learns more about why her mother does this and, you know, and kind of helps her mother reconcile with the town. But it's also a story about sisterhood. You know, there's a family mystery that Ava is able to uncover. And of course, characters that we got to spend time with in the first two books, reappear. So we have Felice from book one, and we have Rooster from book two, and then we have the mayor of the town, and and so you don't need to read the books in sequence, but if you have, you'll be pleased to see the return of some of these fun characters.
Yeah, neat. It must be a lot of fun being able to create a world that you can come back to again and again as an author.
Yes, I put so much love into the creation of this fictional town of Tres Leches, and I wish it weren't a fictional town. I would love to go visit and hang out a weekend there. And so a lot of times when you write a story and you meet your characters, or, you know, you create a setting, and there's a sort of sadness when you finish the book, because even as a reader, you know, a lot of times there's a certain sadness because you are saying goodbye. And even though your imagination can keep thinking about them, it, you know, you're not really as engaged with them as you were. And so I'm just thrilled that I had a chance to spend three books in Tres Leches with these characters. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it challenging for you when you started the series? Did you have trepidations that, I've never done this series stuff before, I don't know if I can come back again and again?
There is a learning curve for me because it is my first series. And I wrote the first book and I had a very vague idea of what the second book, you know, was going to be about. But almost no idea what the third book was going to, I just knew which characters I was going to focus on, you know? And so there was a lot of, you know, back and forth with my editor, and we were talking about the difference between like a sequel and a book in a series, you know, and 'cause I did want each book to kind of be self-contained. And so each book to kind of be like maybe an episode, but not necessarily one that you needed to have foreknowledge of, you know, to understand. So there was a lot of learning for me. And that's what I love about writing. I've been writing for a long time. And every time I tackle a new book, there's something for me to learn about writing in that process. So I feel like it's just endless, the things that I can learn.
So tell me, what is the difference between a sequel and a book in a series?
Well, like a sequel kind of relies on the previous book. So it's like a continuation of that story.
Okay.
So book one might end with a cliffhanger, and you've got to read book two to figure out how that resolves itself. So it might have some storylines that resolve, but it'll leave something unresolved. Where like a book in a series, the subsequent books, forgive me, I've got a dog, and so
no worries.
She might bark at us. But a book in a series will have some of the same characters. It'll be in the same world, but it'll be a fresh start, and it'll conclude. The story will conclude, and you won't necessarily have to, read the next book to find out how everything ends.
Mm, yeah. Did you enjoy this writing this series to the point where you want to create a new series?
I don't have any new series in mind right now, but I'm definitely open to the idea in the future of kind of revisiting the series genre, you know. But I just don't have one in mind right now. Yeah.
And was it when you or your agent first approached your editor, did you think that this would be a series, or did they like the story so much that they came back to you and said, we want you to do three of these?
I really had in mind to do three from the very beginning, and so that was something that we had conversations about from the very beginning. And it was so helpful to me. I had a great, my books are published by Coquila, which is part of Penguin Random House, an imprint there. And I had such a wonderful team. My editor, Joanna Cardenas, is just a great person to have a conversation with, about what's happening in the book. And so I did have it in mind from the very beginning. I knew that there were three characters, and the stories are based on South Texas legends. And so the monstruos are the monstruos of South Texas. And one is La Llorona, which is probably the most famous of the legends. And that's the first book, the Wailing Woman. And the second one is the Dancing Diablo. And then Lechuza. And I wanted time with each of these creatures, from the very beginning. But I knew it would be too much to put in one book. So... Mm-hmm. So yes, to answer your question, I had in mind to write a series from the very beginning.
Yeah. It's wonderful. There have been so many series in my life, both book series and television series that, I just love. And it's funny now, I'm at the point now in my life where I used to be a big fan of movies, but now it's like, no, I'd rather, instead of spending 3 hours, I'd rather binge a series that even if I saw it before, I just want to sit there and have an extended period with the characters.
I feel the same way. I've been more interested in television series lately. And I think it's a lot of it just has to do with, especially like now we have all these limited series that are going on. And I feel like they take their time to let the stories unfold, and you have more time to really get to know the characters and to see them in different situations. And even like the supporting characters get, there's more time to give them room for their stories. So yeah, I feel the same way. I've been interested more in series over the movies.
Yeah. And there's something about going into a theater. I don't know if they spray the room with melatonin or I'm asleep before the previews conclude. Always makes my wife crazy. Tell me, what are you working on for your next project?
So for my next project, and I really did just start working on it this summer, so it's very, very, very new in my mind. I'm not quite sure if it's going to work out, because you know how it is when you write. Not everything pans out. But there's an urban legend, and I lived in San Antonio for many years, and there's an urban legend about a bus that got hit by a train, and it was full of children, and the children died, and so their ghosts kind of haunt the intersection where this happened, but they're helpful ghosts. So like if your car stalls on the train tracks, they push it out of the way. And so this is something that this is like a big thing in San Antonio, and people drive their car to this intersection and, you know, leave it on the train track so the ghost can push it away. The story of the haunted train tracks. I found out that a couple of years ago they actually fixed the track so the cars wouldn't roll because it was just causing traffic problems. But I heard that story my whole life, and so I'm working I'm not writing exactly about that, but I'm using that as a source of information, a source of inspiration for my next book, which will be told from these little ghost children's point of view. And so there they are at these train tracks, you know, and I'm calling it at this time, the train too far away. I don't know if it's going to work out. I hope it does. I'm having fun with it, but I'm really still in the discovery stage.
You seem to love this, the area of legends and the, I don't know if occult is the right word, but, what draws you to these stories?
You know, early books, the books that I had been writing, they're all kind of very firmly rooted in the realistic fiction genre. And it really kind of started, I just always had in mind that I would like to try to write something that was like fantasy fiction, just to kind of, like I said, broaden my abilities as a writer, you know, explore something else. And I was just really afraid to do it because I wasn't quite sure how to handle these made-up worlds and, you know, and things like that. But a few years ago when Coco came out, Disney invited me to do the middle grade novelization of the film, and I jumped on it because I was like, here's an opportunity for me to practice, you know, because the story was there for me. I just had to like turn the screenplay into a book, but it gave me an opportunity to learn how to world build in prose, how to handle the rules of magic that these fantasy novels have. And that gave me the courage to pursue this. And so that's just, I just love it. And not that I will never go back to writing realistic fiction. I just go where my imagination, what is capturing my imagination at the moment. And this is where I'm at right now.
Boy, what a great thing to be able to say is I was practicing writing a Disney book.
That was my learn to write fantasy fiction project.
So cool. Well, how do you keep the laws of the world that you're creating straight in your mind? Do you have a board where you put up little sticky notes, or do you have a canon, or, you know, is it all laid out in an outline before you start writing?
I have a notebook where I'm not a very formal in my planning stages. I like to journal. And so I have a notebook where I just free write and journal. But then I get to a point where I'm like, okay, what did I decide about this? And so I'm also, I like lists. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I will put a list, you know, and have that as a reference for myself. But even so, sometimes I kind of forget, you know, it takes a long time to write a book, and, you know, you're on page 80, you know, maybe several months after you wrote page 8, and you kind of sometimes forget what you've done. And that's where a really good editing team will point out the inconsistencies. And sometimes you kind of have to like realize, oh, I actually made this impossible. I might have to go back and rethink this. But it's so much fun.
Have you ever written yourself into a corner?
I have written myself into corners. And one of two things happens. If I'm really invested in the story, I will go back and I will figure it out. And you have to like be willing to like do away with a lot of what you wrote when you do that, you know. And if you're too precious with what you wrote, it's going to be really hard to revise, you know. But if I'm not, if I write myself into a corner, sometimes I'm just like, this story's just not working. And I just don't have the energy for it. I just don't have the energy to figure it out. And I just put them aside. So I know writers realize this, but I don't know if people who aren't actively involved in writing realize this. But a lot of what you write is just, you know, it doesn't make it into any kind of final project. You know, mm-hmm. It's just... You have to just enjoy writing and not always think about every word has to be perfect and has to be part of the final book. You have to be willing to make changes, do away with stuff. And so to that end, I have a file on my computer that I call notes. But what it really is are the deleted sentences, paragraphs, chapters. Because I don't really want to truly throw them away, so I just put them in another file.
And have you had an experience where you've gone back to those
deleted files? I actually have. With Ava and Alwich, you know, I had to go back. I had taken some stuff out, you know, because I didn't think it was working. And then I did like this major, major revision. I don't know what got into me. Like, it was very late in my process. But I just had one of those aha moments. And so some of those paragraphs made their way back in. So I was glad I kept them.
Very cool. Yeah. I remember when I was young, I loved writing stories. And of course, this is long before computers were even thought of. And I would have these pieces of paper and I'd outline a paragraph and put an arrow and that it's going to go somewhere else,
yeah.
Go to that somewhere else place. And this is where this goes. And it was a lot of fun. And you just brought back a neat memory for me.
Yeah. My initial writing always starts out by hand.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to get those cheap spiral notebooks. And I don't put any pressure on myself to actually go anywhere with it. I'm just exploring. And that's kind of where I am with the Train to Far Away right now, you know. But I took it on a trip with me. And I spilled a Gatorade all over it. And I'm like, oh, no. Then I wish I had a computer. I wish I had it computerized. But I was able to dry the pages. I think I figured out what I wrote.
That's it got blurred. Hey, before we go, did anything happen in Ava that surprised you?
You know, one of the things that made writing Ava and the Owl Witch a little more difficult than the first two stories is that there is like a legend, like a story, you know, associated with La Llorona and with the Dancing Diablo that I was able to draw on. But La Lechuza doesn't really have a story that I could find. It was mostly like, you know, there were incidents, things that she did, sightings, that kind of stuff. But there was like no actual story.
Uh-huh.
I just found little glimpses here and there. So I found myself in a position to need some kind of origin story for, you know, the initial creation of these owl witches. And I didn't know what that was going to be, but it was in the back of my mind and I was walking, you know, around my neighborhood one day and I had my aha moment. And I'm really proud of that origin story that I created. I think it fits perfectly with what's happening in the book, but also with the actual history of South Texas. I'll leave that as a teaser.
Okay. Wait, can you tell us what that moment was? Like, did an apple fall on your head as you were walking?
No, I'm just walking and I'm just thinking and I'm like, hey, I think I know what to, I mean, it's like this, just an aha. It's like, and that happens sometimes, you know, but it's always like when you have it and you kind of give a task to your brain, I guess, and you tell your brain, okay, you got to figure this out, but you're not like deliberately thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when your alpha waves are flowing and then it's like somewhere in your mind's thinking about it. And then it like reveals itself. It's amazing. I love when that happens.
And then you have to write. All right. I have to write this.
Oh yeah. I have to hurry home and write it down. Exactly.
We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Ava and the Owl Witch and find out more about all the great books that's come from your imagination.
You can visit my website. It's very easy, www.dianalopezbooks.com.
That is pretty easy. Mm-hmm. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Ava and the Owl Witch. It's a new middle grade novel from our friend Diana Lopez. Diana, thanks for being back on Reading with Your Kids.
I enjoyed it, and it was great to be here again.
Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork's spicy Chicago Fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com, promo code READ to get 20% off. Because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. Hey, my friends. You know one of my favorite parts of the day is story time. There's just something magical about snuggling up with your kids, opening a great book, and escaping into an adventure together. And let me tell you, that moment becomes even more magical when you're curled up and the softest, coziest bedding you've ever felt. That's why I'm so excited that CozyEarth.com is supporting Reading with Your Kids. Their bamboo sheets, comforters, and pajamas are unbelievably soft, naturally breathable, and temperature regulating, which means no more sweaty nights or chilly toes. Right now, Cozy Earth is offering Reading with Your Kids listeners an unbelievable and exclusive 41% off their entire site. That's right, you heard me right, 41% off. So go ahead, create your own cozy reading nook, wrap yourself and your kids up in something comfy, grab your favorite bedtime book, and turn story time into the best part of your day. Head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code READ at checkout to save 41%. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code READ. Join us right now from the great state of Arkansas. Our guest is here today to celebrate her new picture book. It's called Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree. Please welcome to the show Kathleen McInnes Kickline. Kathleen, how are you?
I am delighted to be here, Jed, truly. Yes.
Kathleen and I just had a delightful 5-10 minute conversation about kids and family, so I know you're going to enjoy listening to her tell us about this book, A Toy Eating Tree. What a terrifying thing for a young kid to have in their life.
Oh, it's not uncommon.
I have no idea.
Well, it's funny you should mention that I have here a Family Circus cartoon from who knows how long ago, and I don't think you can see it, but it's got a picture of a little boy going out with a paper airplane, coming back with his hands in his pockets, dejected, and it just says, "I hate trees." And the day that inspired the story, when my grandsons received a toy airplane of some kind, we no longer are even so sure what exactly it was, I determined to take them out to fly their plane. And I said to them, because we lived in Seattle at the time, we need to find a place where there's not too many trees, which isn't easy to do in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And by golly, we looked and looked, went by, down by the library, found a lovely lawn with a nice big hill. I think we had a couple successful flights, and then it got stuck in a tree.
Got stuck in the tree. Man, oh, man, I hate it when that happens. So you mentioned your grandson. Your grandson and family times together was the inspiration for the story?
Yes, it was actually so originally two boys in the, of the several grandchildren I have, two of them. I sometimes call one Terrence and the other McPhee because of the story. And we had a little childhood incident, and I created a poem around it afterward. And then the poem grew with the boys and began to add more and more things to it. And it became something just like you, I've noticed you say in your podcast, the stories shared together between parents or grandparents and children, they become part of your common shared life. Mm-hmm. And you can draw back upon them. So that's where the other layer to it started to evolve. It's written in the back of the book. Each of the boys wrote a testimony. Do all that you can. Throw everything at it. And so in all the different stages of the book. So when they've gone through life, we've kind of gone back and drawn from the lessons that we learned in the story of Terrence McPhee.
Yeah. I've mentioned here on the podcast that one of the great, hopefully it's something that will serve her very well, but one of the great things I think that I shared with my daughter is a sense that when things are happening, especially when difficult or scary things are happening, a great way to look at it is to sit down and tell yourself, this is going to make a great story someday. And, she certainly has adopted that as part of her life. And I think, you sharing this story through the pages of a book with the rest of the world is a great way to kind of help kids understand that, things happen, and sometimes the things are good, sometimes the things aren't. But with time and perspective, they can make for good stories. And I know that helps my daughter get through those times when she's stressing out, and she can sit back and go, okay, this is going to make a good story. I don't like it right now, but someday we're going to laugh about it.
Yeah, I grew up in a generation, as most of us did. It's still a classic, and I absolutely love this book. I love it. It's a wonderful book. The Little Engine That Could, with I Think I Can.
Uh-huh.
And I think, say you're a child learning to ride a bike. Inside, you're saying, I think I can. And it's wonderful to have that empowerment. But there's another piece to that you and I both know. There's darn little over which we have much control.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even less for children.
Right.
And I'm not sure that lesson, though still applicable in many ways, is as applicable as it might have been in, say, 1953. It's a really complex world. So I think there's an underlying message that, 'cause what happens when you get stuck? Not just doing the same thing over and over again and hoping that it will come out better this time, but there might be a time to take a break. Do everything you can, enlist the help of friends or be of assistance to other people. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit in there where they stop and are grateful for their toys. They learn to play. And then there is always that element that you talked about, that you mentioned your daughters, when you said, hey, maybe this will make a good story someday. There's an element of stepping back and an element of surprise in the way that things happen. There's a little bit of interconnectedness in life. The ultimate protagonist or hero in the story ends up being a butterfly. But probably the youngest child sitting on your lap is the first one to notice that early in the pages, there happens to be a very little caterpillar.
Ah.
And they may not even hear the words. I think children like rhyme. And they'll catch the cadence of that and enjoy the rhyming. Enjoy the comfort of being on your lap. But they're going to go, ooh, that's a bug. So there's that level that a child is kind of getting the book.
Yeah.
And then that becomes something that later ends up being kind of the lesson in the story.
Yeah.
That last page has that little saying, the answer you are seeking is already in the making. I think what we can give children is a sense of trust. There's so much more going on in the world than we could ever know or even imagine.
There certainly is. And boy, I love that story. And I'm thinking back and imagining my kids picking up on that caterpillar. really, really early and kind of just being really into it and being curious as to what that caterpillar is up to.
Yeah. And Scott did a wonderful job illustrating. I mean, I didn't know where he'd go, but how he made it appear so that it gets your attention. But then it's a little like Where's Waldo?
Uh-huh.
The adult is much less apt to see the bug than the child right. is, yeah. which is sort of fun.
You mentioned Scott. That's your illustrator. Let's give Scott a big shout out.
Oh, my gosh. He's fantastic. So I mentioned the fact that two grandsons were part of the story.
Yeah.
And one of them, Tristan, I asked him at one point, well, could you draw the characters, Terrence McPhee and his friends? He said, yeah, I think I could. And he said, what do you think they'd look like, Mama? I said, well, they might look a little like you. and he went into his imagination as he wrote in the back of the book, they were there. They just were there waiting. And it would have been fun to have used exactly what, but you know, he has his own life to live, career. And this is a big deal during the book.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine introduced me to Scott Ward. And I think he must be truthfully one of the most unselfish of peoples because he was open to the idea of taking a look at what Tristan had created.
Uh-huh.
And he went from there and made magic happen. He added life and color and movement, and his art is just, we're all so pleased with what he has done. He's been a dream to work with.
That's wonderful. So tell me your initial reaction. It sounded like you might have been a little hesitant to let somebody, a quote-unquote a stranger, kind of tell part of your story. What was that like, being able to let go? And then what was it like when you first saw the illustrations?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I went to his website and looked at his art, as did Tristan and Brennan. Excuse me. And I loved what I saw. I just... That helped a great deal, although there wasn't – and there's – the gal who mentioned it, she has a children's book he'd done. So – but it was magical when I went back to Seattle and went to his studio in Bellingham, Washington. And I really was a kid in a candy shop. All the panels that he'd created in full color oils, and it was just wonderful. I really was a child again in that setting.
That's awesome. Now, you created Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree, obviously to share a little bit about your family and that wonderful story. Did you always envision yourself eventually writing a children's book?
Yes and no. I think from everybody said, I've always wanted to write books. I've always loved sharing stories and books mm-hmm. with kids. And my website, there's a picture of myself and three of my sisters, I'm the oldest of eight, at the library doing a summer reading program. My parents took us to the library every Saturday. Every Saturday, we'd pick up armloads of books and bring them home. And as the oldest, I would read to my brothers and sisters, which, frankly, I think I preferred to my own books. I just loved doing that. And I did that with my children and my grandchildren. And so it's a very important part of my life to me to be able to share that. And at the beginning, that was my plan for Terrence McPhee. It's very, very hard. I have found that even there's a lot of publishing companies on children's books will even say, do not bother to submit rhyme. And I'm guessing that because editing it is just like impossible.
Okay.
You know, that's my guess because children love rhyme.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went on to do other things, you know. I left my toy stuck in the tree and I went off and did, I read other kinds of books in nonfiction. And really, again, it was the boys. Brennan was always saying, Mama, when are you going to make it Terrence McPhee into a book? I mean, he never let up. He's the cheerleader of the two. And then it was Tristan who said, Mama, it's time. I said, yeah, I think it is. So we did.
Wonderful. That must have been felt really great to have those cheerleaders cheering you on and encouraging you to make this happen.
Yeah, I do consider it a team effort between mm-hmm. myself, the boys, and Scott. Yeah. And, of course, you know, all the other people you know that you get involved in your project, including the people who just listen to me endlessly carrying on.
Have you had a chance to read Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree at a library or in a school yet?
I've got some things coming up. You know, it is so new that I've read it to people I know, but I do not. I get tomorrow my first box of books. I have the proof edition here. I've got several things set up for schools and other places that I'll be doing the next 2 months, and I hope a little bit more. And I will bring with me the little paper airplane that is on the website, not in the book, but there's a QR code in the book that'll take you to the airplane. So there's a lot of fun things about the tree that different kids, depending on, you know, their personality, their age, and their interests, that they can engage in different ways.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Trees are something that most of us don't even see sometimes. I mean, we see there's a tree, but we don't see the tree until it becomes part of our lives. And just last week we had family in, and we were out in our backyard. And at one time, until my kids were grown, we had this giant, beautiful oak tree. And it was right in the center of our property, and it was such a magnificent tree, and it held so many memories because that's the kids climbed on it. We had the hammock tied to it. We would sit under the tree and read stories and look up and imagine all the thousands of creatures that were calling that tree home. And unfortunately, we had to take it down because it was older than me and was endangering the house. But it's, you know, I just love, and I hope folks that are listening to this and getting ready to go out and get their copy of Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree, just spend some time, find a tree that you can lie under with your kids and read the story, and just make that tree part of you and your kids' lives, whether it's at a park in your backyard or and a favorite reservation, because again, it's one of those memories that I think you'll cherish. And like I said, we had family over, and you know, we looked out, and you can still see the spot where the tree was, and it's like, wow, it's sad that it's gone, but it's just, there's so many happy memories.
Yeah, I have a memory of the older children. In the summertime, when the little ones went down for naps, my mother would send the older ones outside and with some Kool-Aid and a blanket, and we'd put them on under the tree, and we brought our books. Nice. And that's what we did. We spent some time in the shade of the tree reading our books, and it's a wonderful memory.
Yeah. It absolutely is. Well, tell me, now that Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree is just about ready to drop, as the cool kids say, is there a second book, another story that you're going to be sharing with the world?
You know, I don't have plans for it, but I'm going to kind of tease the Arkansas cousins, our grandchildren. Joey here, he and I created a poem too, Tim O'Toole. Tim O'Toole, that silly little fool, went to school with, forgot, let's see, Tim O'Toole, that silly little fool, forgot, teacher said, and I said, oh, and I can't remember it now, but he goes to school, never got it in his head what the teacher said. What you wear to school is a kind of tool, like a pencil or your book, and it matters how you look. And he did a little rap beat, and I did that, and so on, but he hasn't nagged me and say, Mama, when are we going to make it into a book? we might make it into a soundtrack or something.
Okay. Well, I am encouraging you to make that story, that poem into a book, so you can come back on and celebrate it with us here on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you. Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah.
Tell me, you know, we've talked a lot here on the podcast about the benefits that kids get when they read, when we as parents, grandparents, friends, educators, when we read to them, Could you talk a little bit about the benefit? Because reading with kids has been such a big part of your life with your kid at the library, with your grandkids. Tell me the benefits that you think you've experienced from reading all of those words.
Just an incredible bond with the child. I mean, I started with all of them when it was only a sensory experience, you know, being held, being listening to the voice and the rhythm and so on. And then here we are as adults, and all of my grandchildren and I have things we'll say from a child's book. You know, we loved George and Martha books. We wrote our own, you know, and there's little pieces of wisdom or other things that I wrote for them that they remember. So it just operates on so many levels. I think it becomes something that it's incredibly bonding. And as you've mentioned before, I think it sets them up for a love of books. And helps them with their whole processing and educational thing. But mostly I see it as bonding. And I truly believe that a great book does hold something of enduring value for children or for anybody. You know, it's fine to have just a good read from time to time. I really appreciate a book that has that enduring value. And I know Scott, the illustrator, boy, he caught on so early. He said about Terrence McPhee, he said, you know, as soon as he read it, he said, the story of trying to acquire something that is just out of reach is universal. It's part of life. Many times in my life, I've wanted something that was oh so close, whether it be a job, a love, or an experience, different things. As Terrence and his friends learn, do everything you can, ask for help, and then trust. Trust that the outcome is what you need. And we've gone there time and again, the kids and me. You know, we said, you know, sometimes just let it go for a while. Just let it go. Don't force things. And so, and I think that's true of so many things we've shared in common. You know, you can talk about Wind in the Willows and say, how do you really make an apology? What exactly was wonderful about the way that Mole apologized to Rad? You know, there's all kinds of ways in which books continue to be the what we draw from.
Absolutely. I love it. Let's tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree and find out more about you.
Well, thank you. I would go to terrencemcphee.com. That's my website. There's a lot on there. There's beside the paper airplane and the educator guide and some more background stuff. And of course, it's available on Amazon.com. It can be ordered through your local bookstores. So please do. I'd like that very much.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree. It is the debut picture book from our guest, Kathleen McGinnis Kickline. Kathleen, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you, Jetty. It's been great fun.
Hey, real quick, we want to let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Zivo Life. Zivo.life. Zivo Life. Hey, parents, caregivers, and book lovers, ever wish you had a little bit more zip in your step when you're reading The Very Hungry Caterpillar for the fifth or the 50th time today? Say hello to Zivo Life, your new best friend in daily wellness. Zivo Life is the world's most nutrient-dense whole plant, loaded with 50% plant protein, essential amino acids, fiber, antioxidants, and so much more. It's a powerhouse in just one teaspoon a day, and yes, is giving people more energy, better gut health, and even healthier skin and hair. If you want to feel more energized, focused, and vibrant during your next animated storytime performance, Zivo Life might just be your secret weapon. Visit Zivo.life, Zivo.life, and use the promo code READ to get 30% off your order. It comes with a 30-day risk-free guarantee, and you've got nothing to lose except your sluggishness. Go now to Zivo.life and use the promo code READ and save 30%. Mm-hmm, yeah. JJ, do you have any advice for aspiring voice actors?
Oh, well, it's funny when people ask Chris, do you have any advice for writers? He says, read, read, read. And I would say, listen to every audiobook you can get your hands on, especially the genre that you're interested in doing, because there are subtle differences and usually a different crop of narrators depending on what genre. So if you're interested in children's books, check out a bunch of audiobooks and listen to all of them, and you'll get the hint. You'll get the idea of how you change the characters. It doesn't have to be a huge change. It can be subtle. But if you're thinking of a character in your mind, then you can think of how they speak, their mannerisms, and you can really separate the character from another character, even without doing a huge vocal change. So, for instance, we were talking about Mr. Stuffington, and if you think about a stuffy character, like we said, Thurston Howell III, if people listening don't know who that is, maybe you know Niles Crane from Frasier, someone that you know that's very stuffy, and just the minute you think about them, you start talking that way. So I would advise you to pick a book and then try to think of a character from a TV show or a movie or even someone that you know, your crazy uncle, who talks a certain way, and give each of those characters one of those voices to practice.
Yeah. Do you have any tips that help you remember what the voice you created or used so that you don't so when you go back to do another scene, you're not sitting there going, oh, how did I do that voice before?
Yeah.
That was my issue when I would read to kids, I do the funny voices, and the next night they're like, no, you did the voice differently last night. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. How did I do it?
That's so funny. Well, you know they were paying attention if that's what they said, so you definitely grabbed them. Think about Jim Dale trying to do the Harry Potter series, right? How many voices? I can't even imagine the number that came to. But luckily, when we're recording a project, the engineer does. That's their job. They keep track, and they'll take a little bit. Whenever a new name comes up, they're like, oh, Jerry the Giraffe, let me put a little sample. So later, if Jerry and the Giraffe comes back, you can say, wait, can you play me Jerry? I don't remember what I did, and they'll help you find it.
But we both have, like, little index cards in our heads that help us keep going. You know, if I'm doing Wags the Dog, I just start panting, you know, like the eager panting. And then with Stuffington, I'm trying to think of that lockjaw. And you do, when you do Stinky, you get those phrases. I want to tell you a story.
Yeah, now listen, he's a bit of a wise guy. So I have, and then Georgia Engel, if anybody watched the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Georgia Engel is who I used for Jerry the Giraffe. So we just have little things in
little
our brain.
Little cues in your brain that you flip through.
Yeah. You know, Raylene, I'm imagining it would be so much fun to just hang out, be a fly in the wall when JJ and Chris are either creating the stories or recording the stories. It looks like they just have so much fun together.
We put together a video behind the scenes of our recording session that we'll start spreading around soon.
That sounds like a great idea. Wow, that was a fun episode. Thanks for hanging out with us here on Reading With Your Kids. If this episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, and if you didn't smile or think about something listening to this episode, well, then you must have been asleep, because this was a great episode. Please consider sharing the link with somebody you love. Maybe post about it on your socials. We'd be so grateful if you could leave us a 5-star review. And of course, we'd love for you to subscribe to the show so you never miss a moment of Reading With Your Kids. So very grateful for the people who made this show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Diana Lopez. Please be sure to check out Ava and the Owl Witch. Kathleen McGinnis Kickline. Please be sure to check out Terrence McPhee and the Toy Eating Tree. I also want to thank Chris and JJ Grabenstein. They will be with us once again in the next couple of weeks. I ran into Krista and JJ up at the Chappaqua Children's Book Festival. They are looking forward to being back here with you on Reading With Your Kids, and we are looking forward to having them back on with us. Also want to thank our incredible sponsors, our book sponsors, Once Upon a Dance, Be Careful What You Hear, and Trumpet the Miracle Wolf Pup. And of course, we want to thank our other sponsor, our affiliate sponsors, Zeebo.life, CozyEarth.com, and BigForkBrands.com. Use our promo code READ, R-E-A-D, and you will receive some great discounts. You know, real magic happens when you support our sponsors and use our promo code READ. You get a great deal, and we may earn a small commission. And that helps keep the lights on. It helps us keep spreading the joy of reading together. My team, they deserve a big thank you. Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty, Raylene Tang, our intern from last year, was also part of our Chris and JJ Grabenstein interview. We want to thank her for all the work she did. I want to give a big shout out and a big verbal hug to my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. And of course, we all want to thank you. You are amazing. And you are making the world a kinder, more empathetic, and more loving place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. Until next time, go make some reading magic happen.